welcome to Gene Simmons Vault, the experience here in Atlanta, Georgia. My name is Keith. I'm the global project manager at Rhino Records. Thank you guys all for being here. Want to make sure you have a great time. Take a lot of pictures. Film a lot of video. Hashtag Gene Simmons Vault. If you have a problem today, if your ice is too cold, if your sandwich is not good, if you didn't get your pre-pack, please come see me or see Eric, who's in the back with the hat right there. No applause for Eric? Okay, man, sit down. They gave you the clap. That's nice. So if you, seriously, if there's any problems today, anything you need, come see us. Don't wait 3 days and go on Facebook and go, my sandwich was terrible. We can't fix it 3 days from now. So let's get it fixed. We want to make sure that today is an amazing day for everybody. Everybody has a really good time and leaves here, you know, feeling good about it. So the first thing I want to do, though, is we took everybody's name when you came in. Our friends at KissReplicas.com gave us that boot. So we picked a name randomly out of everyone who bought a vault. Is Rhonda Robinson here? Come on up. That's your boot. Take your boot. There you go. Awesome. So again, everybody have a good time. We're going to start this up in a couple of minutes. Thank you all for being here. There's going to be food later. I understand everyone found the booze room, which is good. It's a good place to start, right? And then we're going to have some food. It's going to be a great day. So thank you all for being here. Want me to introduce you again?
No. You wanted the best and you got it.
Oh, thanks, Dad.
I appreciate it. 1, 2, 3, 4, oh, that's so nice. Got a little feedback going on, too. So, can you raise my level, Miguel? Miguel and I spent 3 days trying to get a balance, but I think he's finally getting it. So nice to see you all. All right, settle down. See that young lady with a nice bouffant on top of her head? She's actually one of the ownerettes of this place. Where's Paul? Yeah. Paul, I love your show, Duck Dynasty. It's great. So those two own this wonderful, wonderful facility, and if it wasn't for them, you guys wouldn't have such a wonderful experience. I mean, look how cool this is, huh? Yeah. One of the last places on Earth that actually uses a board, analog board. Who was in here recently? Lenny Kravitz?
Elton John.
Elton was here, yeah. Elton who? Yeah, Elton John. Who else? Yeah, I know them all. Okay, so the reason I wanted to take some time and do this actually around the world, we're even going to Australia at the end of August. Yes. How old are you, young lady? I'm 107. I'm old. Graduated 5 years, paid taxes, did all that, and then applied for citizenship, and I think
that's the way it should be
done. And I am proud to be an American citizen. I was born in Israel. I know I don't look Swiss, so we have a dual citizenship, and my kids with Shannon are both American and Canadian dual citizens. Their mother is a Canadian. She was born in a place called Newfoundland, which is a Newfoundland, which is way on the tip of Canada. And what I'm about to tell you is completely accurate. She came from a town right down the road from Dildo, Canada. She graduated from Dildo High School. We actually ate, I'm not even laughing, that's just true. When there's nothing to do up there, you know. And we actually ate at the Dildo restaurant I had a dildo burger. I swear to you, on my children. And outside is a kind of a drunk sailor going, "Welcome, it's Captain Dildo. You're overlooking Placentia Bay. Look it up on your Google or Schmoogle. Just press buttons." And that's down, Placentia Bay is down the road from Come By Chance. Holy and shit. On the other place is Spread Eagle. And I guess drunken sailors, what's that? No, well, I can, but that happens to be true. And so when I came to America speaking of potato chips, I was a little kid and I had dreams just like all of you have dreams. And, you know, thanks to you, you're a good looking bunch, I have to say. Thanks to you,
yeah, right.
Thanks to you, I'm here. Because if it wasn't for you, and I'm not saying this to sugarcoat anything, I'd be asking the next person in line, would you like some fries with that? And that's also okay. Nothing wrong with putting in a hard day's work anywhere, anytime. In fact, you're blessed if you have a job. So that's why I'm doing this. See, we wanted to put together the largest box set of all time. That's right. 167, I think that child just gave me the finger. 167 tracks that have never been released. It's in back of this good looking son of a bitch right there. To the, go to underground. That's the thing. It is about 3 feet tall, weighs 40 pounds, has metal gear. I mean, it's real hardcore. Spent a long time. The Rhino folks are insane, just like I am. And we wanted to do something that nobody's ever done before. He's trying to pick them up. And inside, there's 167 tracks, songs I've written with Bob Dylan, three of them, three Van Halen, Gene Simmons tracks as a power trio. Joe Perry appears on it. All the Kiss guys, Paul, John, Ringo, they're all on it. See what I did there? And Ace is on there. He even sings a song or two. And so, you know, for me, it's a thing. Either it can stay up in the, the really good-looking Gene Simmons action figure.
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
The figure made her cry.
No? Somebody step on your foot? Okay. And there's a lot of stuff. Now, look, I don't want to go through it, but Uncle Keith, that's him. See the bottom? Can you press that bottom thing? There's a secret compartment. If you press that, and then you press it closed, you open it and close it by pressing, there's going to be something in there for my private collection. It's all bubble wrapped. I have a lot of stuff. Once you have it, I won't have it. Do you understand that? So this is going from my... So they're all different. I don't know what's going to be in there. And you'll find... You want to try it?
Do you want me to show them what's in there?
Well, do you want to? It's a Jewish conversation. How are you? How should I be? Who wants to know? Why are you asking?
They stay.
Fuck, can't have anybody say anything. What time is it? What time should it be? Why, are you going someplace? What do you got? Into the mic?
Yes, of course. Sonic Boom, Backstage All Access Pass.
Wow, that's... In the earlier days, before the apocalypse, the female of the species would do almost anything for one of those.
Kissology on DVD.
Yeah.
And a promotional cup from Mardi Gras in 2017.
Few people have these except this young gentleman. They were promo items out of everything. And I keep everything, and I wanted to make sure. Now, in some of them, you should know they're my watches. Literally, I have about 100 watches and stuff. Instead of putting them in the attic, I want you to have them. And my old gloves and glasses and lyric sheets and cassettes, all kinds of wacky stuff. You never know. You never know what you're going to get, so step right up.
They already did. They're here. They're in.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the music? And can we talk about the first song that you kind of took you on the journey to become who you are? The first song you ever wrote, which is In the Vault.
1964, I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. Long time, before you were born. it was a singularity like nothing I'd ever seen. By the way, I'm not wearing my asshole glasses, which I usually have on, because I wanted to get close to and have you look at my pretty eyes. And so I felt awkward living in America because I talk like these very clipped vowels, because English was my third language. And I talk like what time it is and all that. Just like Lotka. What was his name?
Lotka.
Lotka. From Andy.
Kaufman.
Yeah. What?
Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman, yes. And when I saw the Beatles, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and all of a sudden it was like carte blanche. It's okay to be different, come from someplace else, and have an accent, and the chicks will still love you. I'm going, yeah. Because they said, oh, hello, that was all, you know, all that stuff. The girls go, if you talk like that. And I figured they've got an accent. They look like little girls. Anyway, the English were smaller. They had these cutesy hairstyles. I didn't know what I was seeing. But within 2 years, I wrote my own song. And I didn't know that they all used the same chords. And I taught myself how to play a few chords by watching George Harrison's hands. While all of them are going, woo, you can see George going like this. You have to lower it, Miguel. Pretty good. So I heard the Kinks. Well, he gets up in the morning, you know it goes. And he comes back home at 5:30, same train every time. There's another verse, and then he's a well-respected man about town, doing the best things so conservatively. So I actually learned to play that song. Well, gee, that's not hard. In fact, hundreds of thousands of songs were written like this.
Earth Angel?
That's right, sing it. Three, four.
He danced like heaven, whatever the fuck the lyrics are. Because I love you, I love you, I do.
Something I said, young lady? I'm at 4:13, I think. So I copied it. Especially this part. Everybody uses that. In fact, they use it here. So I copied it. My uncle is a raft, and he always keeps me floating. He is so good to me.
What?
He treats me tenderly. Ugh. It doesn't matter who you are. So I did that, and that's in there. It's 50 years old.
In the vault.
And I was, 14 or 15 when I first wrote that song. And along the way, you know, I was writing songs. I didn't know what they meant or anything, but I was noticing how the Beatles and everybody else were using very, very simple chords like this. Look. Hundreds of thousands of songs have been written, including blues. That's what blues is based on. 1, 4, 5. We're going to try an experiment, okay? This is not prepared, and I'm going to stay away from you guys because we've seen each other too many times. Young lady, the Elvira-looking chick, can you stand? If only I wasn't gay. Make up any phrase that you want, and we'll show you how songs are, like a blues song is written.
My heart's been weeping.
heart's been weeping.
Yeah, Miguel.
My heart's been weeping all night long.
Oh yeah.
My heart's been weeping, yeah, all night long.
You can't hold that in your hands, baby.
It's much too strong. So blues uses those chords, right? 1-4-5. And all of those blues songs are based on that, you know, the repetition of the words and all that. They don't really have choruses. But then the white boys came and they took those chords. I want to tell you a God's honest truth story. Hey, Denzel Washington, say hello to everybody. Come on, stand up, say hello. Miss Denzel, say hello. Where's Cedric the Entertainer? He's in here someplace. Poor guy. He thought he looked like Elvis. So this guy, John Voight, an actor whose daughter is Angelina Jolie, he's got a brother, Chip Taylor. Chip Taylor is a songwriter, was and continues to be. And in the early days, he didn't know lots of chords. He didn't. And he wanted to write songs and all that. So he went into a demo studio because he had an idea. And he didn't know how to play guitar really well, so he played it just like this. He changed it up to, instantly recognizable, right? What is it? And he's going, a wild thing. I don't know what the melody is, so he's going, a wild thing. I'll figure out the melody later. You make my, because of course hearts sing. You make my heart sing. What should I rhyme here? You make everything. Uh-oh. Groovy. Literally. It's like he'll figure it out later. Because Yesterday by the Beatles, if you look it up in the Beatles Illustrated book, was actually called Scrambled Eggs. It was a good female sound. Yeah, it was originally called Scrambled Eggs. Yesterday, it was scrambled eggs. And Lennon, in essence, was saying, the fuck are you talking about? What's with scrambled eggs? Yes, I made a joke, a grown-up joke. And then it was changed to Yesterday. So he's going, Wild Thing, which becomes an enormous hit by everybody, the Troughs, everybody else, and the record company came and said, you gotta write another song. But he only knew a few chords.
Just call me Angel on the morning, Angel. As though it's just a harmony, baby. Just call me Angel on the morning.
Right? Same chord, same thing. Here, we're gonna make up another one as an example. Another word from somebody, and you'll see how good you're. Just like the Beatles. Give me a line. A whole line. You know, I hold master classes where I teach people how to write their own songs and play an instrument, literally in about 2 hours. And he's always been. I need love. He's always been like that. Using space. No. What is it? I need love.
I need love every day and every night,
which is the same chords as
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade.
Aren't you amazed that you can write the same, your own song against the Beatles chords? So it's endless. So anybody who writes songs, here's one. And we teach this in the master class.
Don't wanna
songs and rip that off because it's only, and there have been entire songs that have used one chord. Funky Broadway.
Every time I go in, there's a street, name of the street, funky Broadway.
Afraid of music. We all sing. I know Uncle Keith wants to say something.
That was pretty good. Can we vault two? Can we put that in vault two?
There is a vault two? You guys have enough money?
Yeah. You never know.
You never close your eyes anymore. And so what you're gonna find on the box set is the history of me as trying to write songs. So I never really talked about it, you know, the guy that spits blood and does all that stuff. It's difficult for me to be convincing and say, you know, I actually started playing guitar first. I can play some piano, a little bit of drums. And I took on bass for the same reason Paul McCartney did. He was originally a guitar player, and he noticed there were too many guitar players. Somebody had to play bass, so he picked it up. And Steven Tyler was not the lead singer in Aerosmith. He was originally the drummer. And Eddie and Alex Van Halen were not originally the guitar players and the drummers. Eddie Van Halen was originally the drummer, and Alex Van Halen was originally the guitar player. So what you see is not necessarily what you get. You know the song Taxman by the Beatles? Isn't it like this? Something like that. So we think, you know, that's Paul playing the bass, but actually the solo. You think that's George Harrison. It's not, it's Paul McCartney. And some of our records, I play the guitar. That's me. And on Creatures of the Night, that's not me on bass. That might be Paul or somebody else. And on I Still Love You, remember the rest of it, but it's Eric Carr on drums. I'm sorry, Eric Carr on bass. I was just sitting there like this. Because he copped a better feel than I did. He could play it better. So, you want to talk about Bob?
Yeah, I want to talk about, because you're showing that all the songs come from different things. I want to talk about your evolutionary process in the vault, where you have a song and you went back, it didn't work for some reason, you took pieces of it, you turned it into another song and yet another song.
This is not unique. People who write books, people who paint, sketch. You know, you don't really know what it is. Even when your painting is done, if you the new scientists of today use x-rays to find out what's underneath the Mona Lisa and so on, there are other fully finished paintings. They started a painting, they finished it, they didn't like it, so they start painting over it all over again. And it's done all the time. You do a book, you write some, and by the way, there's another Gene Simmons book coming out called 27 shortly, on Simmons Books. And anybody who writes, you have a first draft, then you come back and do a redraft. Songwriting is like that. For me, there are people, Mozart specifically, who wrote linear, just came off, that's called genius. You wrote the first note and to the last note, and that's it. That's genius. And Beethoven, you know, who was actually deaf and heard everything in his mind. Ba 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 da 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 da. He heard all that in his mind, although he couldn't hear anything. So, again, speaking of potato chips, he had an older brother who kept talking about what was it?
When we were younger, we became Kiss fans in 1977, like everybody else. And a friend's older brother said, "You think you know about Kiss? You don't know about Kiss."
there's these old songs. There's a song called Eskimo Sun. It sounds like the Beatles.
Does he actually sound like that?
Yeah, he was scary.
Yeah.
And he said, there's a song that sounds like Eskimo Sun that sounds like the Beatles. And then we're sitting in your house, and...
Yeah, we started going over what should be in the box set, and you know, we're there for hours and hours and hours, because that's over 10 hours straight of unreleased tracks. If you start without a poopy break or food or anything, it's over 10 hours. So I finally played. Harrison, you know, here comes the sun. It's all that picking stuff, and he got it from Chet Atkins, who's a country guy. So I don't know why I read a story about how near the North Pole you can have 6 months of darkness and 6 months of daylight. 6 months to go for chicks. Wow. Because you guys aren't friendly to us until the lighting is good. Right? Some of the girls sitting under the overhead lights, curse. The ones who are in the, oh, that looks good. So Eskimo Sun came in. Eskimo Sun, you shine at me. Mother's love, far as the eyes can see. So that demo's on there from 1969, with me playing guitar and some keyboards and stuff. And then later, I thought I should rewrite it because I didn't like it. So I went into a studio in Indianapolis. I remember, having been high or drunk. I remember where I was, what the food tasted like, and who I was with. And rewrote it. Only you. Sorry, even though I wrote them. I need your love. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. So we were working on The Elder, which was my story and the thing that I wanted to do into a movie. Bob Ezrin came along and heard, what are you working on stuff, and took that, and we did his concept record, unfortunately. And he liked that. Oh, no?
I love that album. It's amazing.
Heard about
it? Yeah.
Okay, all right. Wasted orb, and the beat goes on, and the beat goes on with my former girlfriend. Let's keep. You can't go anywhere without. And where was I? Oh, only you. So Ezrin took that and combined it with another one of my songs that was, and then that's the version you hear on The Elder, but the version that's on there is the full Only You song. With me on keyboards, drums, and all that stuff, because nobody in the band wanted to come in. Out of all the years we've been together, and I did demos on the road, hundreds and hundreds, Paul came down and helped me on one, which is in the box set. It's this one. Version of what rock and roll became called You Drive Me Wild, I'll Drive You Crazy, after a Stephen King book called Christine. Mm-hmm. I liked what he did, which is you take, I don't know why ships and cars are called by girls' names, but, you know, it's like, here's my car, Jeff. It's never that. It's always Christine, and the jewel of the so-and-so. She's working really good. Who started that? It's a huge ocean liner. Oh, Captain, she's working fine. But for whatever reason, it had been she, so I like the idea of Christine 16 as a car. Believe it or not, there are car fetishes out there. You have to Google it.
Easy. There are kids in the room.
Guys that marry their cars. I don't want to go farther than that. You know what I'm talking about.
The honeymoon's at a Jiffy Lube. You know what
I have to consent.
Yeah, it's a place. You're just reading into it. Along the lines of the song thing, talk about how Bad Bad Lovin' became one of the probably your one of your better Stone songs. Also one of the best.
One of my better Stone songs?
Best known songs.
One of your better Stone songs. So I came up with these chords. By the way, anybody play guitar? You do. So you know you play an E chord like this, right? Why? When you have to completely change everything to get a bar chord. So why not just go like this? So that's how I play an E. So I like the way those chords work. Let me do guy lyrics like, you need my love, baby. Oh, yeah, that's right. You need me. I don't need you. I'm not the only one. You're not the only one I've ever had. Yeah, that's right. Slap him. He's gone. Yeah. Man stuff. If I say I want to set you free, don't you know you'll be in misery? Yeah, because it's all around my guy. And so originally it was, don't you know, because you gave me bad, bad loving, loving I cannot do without. And that version is on there too, but I didn't like it. I didn't like it as much, so I rewrote it. I may have mentioned this before, I saw Three Stooges, it's before your time, Three Stooges half hour thing on TV, and they were playing wacky doctors who went from room to room and wiped, you know, crazy men in white outfits, calling Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard. They went back and forth, calling Dr. Love, because I got the cure you're thinking of.
Dirty stuff.
And this came fast. So that riff came on, everybody started to play it, and boom. I want to tell you the difference between Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons.
You can't see that. Do you like your band? Do you want to stay in your band?
We've been torturing him for a million years. Paul, to his chagrin, for those of you that speak, you know, he's just straight as I am or anybody else. And it's okay if you want to, you know, if he likes farm animals, we don't care. But we kid around. One of the first, he'll be the first one to admit it. One of the first interviews, they go, this kid's thing's amazing. And Paul Stanley, the lisping prince of so-and-so. So, he's going to hate this. That's okay. We've been together. It was at the Washington, D.C., oh, good Lord, before you were born. So we're different sides of the same coin. We both share the same work ethic. He's a great father, great family man, and on time, and always been there to support me, and I've been there hopefully to support him. So we bring in songs to each other. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? Paul didn't like the first song on that called Are You Ready? Thanks for nothing, I ain't lying. Well, you could shove it where the sun don't shine. And it goes like that. And it's called that. You children out there, that's just funny lyrics. And then following, so we play each other songs. Some he liked, some he wouldn't. And he would bring some stuff, and I would like some, I wouldn't. This one. Put your hands on my pocket. Grab up to my rocket. Hey, Paul, that's cool. Put your hands on my rocket. I know what you mean. Grab up to my pocket. Rocket. That's good. That's cool. What's my part? Take me. No. Male of the species. Let me take you. No, this is about taking me. I'm going to take you. Take me, break me with a falsetto voice. No, don't do that. I'm going to take you and I'm going to break you because somebody's got to do the driving. No, Gene, your part is take me. Break me. Oh, fuck. I kept trying to convince him. Take me. It even rhymes. I'm going to break you. No. Take me. God damn it. So the song came out. And to this day, you know, we're on stage and I'm okay, and I've got the war machine. And you go, oh, here comes that song. Take me. And he comes in and, with another great song. Sounds like a Broadway thing. Tonight, I want to give it all to you. In the darkness, there's something I gotta do. And tonight, that sounds like a Broadway thing. Let's lock it up a little bit. Okay. Dip. What's my part? can I suggest? No. You should do it. And we play a stadiums full of people. And sir, do you think this is funny? And that's the story of my life. You can be in the middle of a concert. People are going nuts. I'm filled with blood and kept smelling like.
You've never smelt that, thankfully. I knew someone snuck in my room. Go ahead, continue. Covered in blood and the smiling
laughter. Yeah, then you gotta do, all right. And Paul just magically has a southerner. All right, y'all. It's a Jew from New York. All right, y'all. How y'all doing? He said the word y'all in his fucking life.
All right, y'all. Here's the next song I'm gonna do around Baltimore. God bless Georgia. Oh, man, loving you.
Listen, people.
You've seen the band live, right? Who's doing the high part? Hate that song.
So you mentioned the Van Halen brothers. And obviously one of the things that people got really excited about is three demos that are in the vault with the Van Halen brothers. Tell everybody how that kind of came about.
Well, look, depending on what you believe of the legend or not, I either discovered Van Halen or signed them, take your pick. Discovered is good. In 1977, I saw the band in a small club, and they just blew me away. Eddie Van, at the time, there were typewriters. Well, this is Eddie Van Halen playing on his guitar. Because he's doing this stuff. I've never seen that before. And the notes are amazing. And I've never seen anything. And David Lee Roth comes out and, you know, does the leg splits only the way women can. Because we would tear them. We tried to do that. He knows what I mean. We can't do that. The way you're going to split. We split our pants and the other thing, too. But there he is, you know, doing all this stuff with his legs. And I never saw a band like that, so signed him immediately. To Man of a Thousand Faces, my production company, flew them to New York and produced a 24-track demo. I think some of the bootlegs have been out there. And you'll notice the arrangements are just like first and second record, 15 songs, because they were my records. But you can't say anybody discovered Van Halen because that talent is authentic. It comes from them, how they play, the style and all that. Just, you know, there's never been a band like that. And so I couldn't get Paul or anybody in the band to agree to take him out on tour as an opening act, which I was convinced they were going to be the next big band. So I let them go. I tore up the contract and said, you guys are free. We're going on a Love Gun tour. basically, I don't need the money, I'm a lucky guy. You know, go with God, see if you can get a record deal. If not, at the end of the tour, I'll kind of come back and get you a deal. They got a deal like that at Warner Brothers. And before we finished in the studio, I tried to convince the guys to do a cover song. Let's do a cover song just in case, because you're going to need a hit single. They go, no, hey man, we don't. As soon as you hear man, you know it's not going to be convincing. Hey man, okay, you don't want to do a cover? Okay, don't do it. So when the first Van Halen record came out, that's their first single. Huge! And that propelled the band. But and then when I went back to the guys in the band, including the manager, Bill O'Coin at the time, see what you didn't do? And they just said, that's all they said. Because what are you going to say?
Would you like to open it up to some questions from the fine people here in Atlanta?
Sure.
Is there a floating mic somewhere in the back? Eric, okay, so Eric has a mic. If you raise your hand, he's going to try to get to you. If you're on an end and get to him, that would be good. But if you're in the middle, just raise your hand and be patient.
By the way, ladies, Eric over there with the white hat, he's single. Tonight, anyway.
Hey, Gene, how do you keep your voice in shape so well? Your voice sounds just as good today as it did 40 years ago.
You're a good-looking son of a bitch. You know, there is such a thing as DNA. You know, you're born with what you're born with. Some people, I've never had a, what is it when people push on it? Massage. Never had a massage in my life. I don't get aches and pains and stuff. I'm just a lucky guy. I hardly ever get sick. I haven't had a cold or anything in, I don't know, 5 to 8 years. You know, all those creams that women see on TV, you know, you're born with the skin you're born with. Either you exfoliate, in other big words, or you don't. You have to do fake stuff. My voice is my voice, and for some reason, I never lose it. Question.
Hey, Gene, I always want to know, what does the blood taste like before you spit it?
Children here. It is made at the beginning of the day with eggs. Everything's been sitting around, not refrigerated, so it's nasty stuff. Yogurt, you know, the thick Greek style, food coloring, molasses, and it sits around all day. You ever taste rotten food that smells like... Don't do it. It's horrific. The reason I have that look on my face is, yeah, when you open your mouth and they pour stuff in there that you never put in your oral passage. But, you know, the other thing is that talking to my good friend before about the voice and not losing and stuff, I don't warm up. You know, just, okay, it's ready to do the show. Okay, here we go. You know, it just comes out. Paul had to go and get his own, he's got his own dressing room. And the whole night before the show,
shut up!
He's got to do that. I don't know.
Question up front.
Okay. Right here.
Elvira.
Elvira. All right, I'm giving my age away, but when I was younger, I remember reading Tiger Beat magazine, and there was an interview in there with you from like 1978 or something. And they asked you, what was your favorite food? And your response was, my mother's goulash. And being a Southern girl, I had no idea what goulash was. And I'm just wondering, is that still your favorite food? And was that an accurate answer?
No, that's accurate. Goulash is poor people food. Irish stews are like goulash. The poor people of the world have one big pot. Usually you have lots of kids, Catholic. You have lots of kids and stuff. And poor people have lots of kids because they don't believe in or don't know about birth control. So there's lots of kids to feed. You get a pot and you throw potatoes and onions, and if you're lucky, you throw meat in it. Yeah. And then you cook it in very... A goulash is no different than an Irish stew. You put potatoes and meat and stuff like that. It's just, you know, the spicing, how you do it and what the amount is. It is still my favorite dish because you can have it as a soup, more watery, or as thick as chili. But my real favorite food, I tolerate food. Cookies and cake and crackers, all that stuff. You know, the nice young lady here who co-owns a studio
took, we got some Southern Green, y'all, and you killed my Lord. You, and what about over here? This burglar when he does a little bit in the corner, I'm going, there's a plate full of fucking cookies. And I went, no, exactly. Is she here?
She's making more cookies.
Is she here? Well, bring her in. Yeah, literally. I literally walk in and this room smells Southern Green, and plenty of green on elk lips and everything. And over here, just a plate of cookies, and that's where I went to. Because they're always good to me. Because you pick it up with your hand and you put it in your mouth. You know, your fork's not. It's the perfect food. Of course. It's not good for you, but.
Hi, Jim. My name is Lance.
Hi.
My question is actually going back to your 1978 solo album, Man of a Thousand Faces. The recording is very orchestrated, so I was wondering what approach did you have to, when you wrote the song, what instrument did you write it with? And then at what point did the decision made to go like full orchestration with it and make it heavy orchestration?
Thank you. The original song was written like, oh, I don't have any level again, Miguel. Why'd you do that? By the way, those are all Stones licks.
Start me up.
It's called a sus four. It's actually a bigger version, but it's the same. Like, amen. It's used in church music. And then you can leave it suspended. So all that is based on that. I originally wrote it on that. And on my solo record in 1904, I played the guitars. I stayed away from bass. Wanted to show up. And so this soundtracks for movies like The Exorcist, a lot of other great movies, he was brought in to orchestrate some stuff. And originally I didn't want to do that, but he said, you know, the Beatles had okay, let's do it. And he picked a few songs. I think it's on See You Tonight and a few other songs, but as soon as he heard Man of a Thousand Faces, he said, okay, you need to get rid of it. Sounds like a Lennon song. Bum, bum, bum. He wants a string blind. So that's all Ron Frangipani came in and did. Paul Buckmaster did the same thing with Elton songs, and George Martin did the same thing with Beatles songs. They'd come in with the songs. Okay, we're going to. And it was George Martin who took Yesterday, because I heard the original demo of McCartney doing that. And it was before, after Scrambled Eggs. That's what it was called. And it's George Martin who said, okay, no guitars, no drums, we're going to do it like a string quartet, which must have been nuts to a band that plays two guitars, drums, and bass.
So there's no original demo then?
It's in the vault.
Oh, it is?
Three versions. Do you have that on there? Anybody?
Eric's here. He wouldn't be able to find it.
Okay, he wouldn't be able to find it. Because there's 167.
I just wanted to, this is Molly. Molly, stand up and wave to everybody.
Okay. Molly said, by the way, Molly doesn't care if you're talking. She'll talk right over you and swallow all the oxygen in the room. As a compliment. Molly's half Jewish too, she says. I don't know what that means.
Really?
So she brought me into the room and she says, y'all don't like this thing. You got certain green, you got thing, you got cooked moose lips and things, all this kind of stuff. What did I do? You remember? On the right hand side of the room where it was.
Oh, we signed our pinball machine.
Well, what?
Pinball machine?
No, that's in another room. What was it? Weren't cookies in the corner?
Oh, yeah, we ate some cookies.
Yes, we did.
We got some sweets in there, too.
Yeah, that's my crap.
A question right up front.
Gene John Downs. I'm here with my niece, Jessie.
Why don't you tell them about you?
What do you want to know?
It's not the first time we've seen each other.
No, sir. I did help get your bass put into the Smithsonian Museum, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was an honor to do that, and I told you then, a world without heroes is no place to be, so thank you for everything you've done for all of us. For all of us. First,
what are you doing in real life?
You wouldn't guess in a million years. I own an auto glass company. We replace windshields in cars and they break.
Now you know.
First, how's your mother?
Great. 92 and rocking, and I just
love her.
We want to hear the conversation I had with my mother. Look, at 92 years of age, the only things you care about is being regular, getting a good night's sleep, and if your doctor thinks, that's all you care about. And whether or not you've watched that episode of I Love Lucy before or not, that's all you talk about. But thank God my mother remembers everything, and this morning I called her in the car, spoke to her in Hungarian, because that's what she speaks, and other languages. And Mom, the money's on it. She wanted cash in the house. But Mom, you don't have to do that. Credit card. She doesn't understand. Credit cards, checks. She knows cash.
Can you tell us the story about the time that Paul came over to your mother's house?
Well, Paul at that time didn't work. I always worked. She couldn't remember his name, but she called him the bum. You know, if a young man didn't work, he's a bum. And, you know, he'd pull up in an old car because he dropped out of school. He wanted to write music and stuff. But during the daytime, his mom fed him, I went to work. Three jobs. And my mother wouldn't stand for any, you know, fool around. And he'd pull up in his Mustang, all beaten up, honk a horn. The bum is outside. That was every day. Okay, Mom, it's Paul, the bum. And so right every day after work, I'd come home. And in those days, I still, you know, the subways didn't have bathrooms. And I went to Richmond College in Staten Island, had to take a ferry to New York, to Manhattan, then take the train all the way to the last stop, and then take the bus all the way to the last stop every day just to go to college. And then afterwards, go to school. You don't want to. They were long days. Needless to say, I became an expert at holding it in. And I don't mean that as a joke. So as soon as I walked in through the door, because like most Jewish men, you live with your mother until you're 50 or 60. That's how you know Jesus was Jewish, because he lived with his mother until he was 32 years old. And you thought his mother was a virgin. And then you went into his father's business. Go, bam, bam, one right after the other. And this sounds like you're farting. That's what you do. I said, no, it's supposed to be boom, boom. Yeah, there. And so Paul would, as soon as I'd walk in the door, Paul would have, you know, I'm writing a new song, what are you doing? He'd go, hello, hello, Fly.
Hello.
Okay, is Gene home?
Yes.
Okay, can you put him on the door?
No.
No, put him on the throne. No. Why can't you put him on the throne?
The king is on the throne.
He tells that story every time. He couldn't convince her. She didn't talk like that, but she was saying, in essence, bitch, I'm not going to interfere with my son.
Did you ever have an opportunity to be able to write with, I know you wrote with Bob Dylan, what about Paul McCartney, your hero? Do you ever have a chance to do that?
Sure. It's not easily done, but sure. And you have to kind of be in the right frame of mind, same city and everything. I happened to put, we were, Gene Simmons' band and us were in Sweden. I mean, a few days ago, I was in Stockholm and Oslo. And the Gene Simmons' band did a show there. And somebody interviewed me, anybody you want to write a song with? I said, yeah, Benny Anderson, you know, from ABBA. Benny Anderson. That major headline, I got a call. We'll see.
I got a question from a little guy up front.
This is what I think about you.
Can you sing his shirt, Gene?
You want to? you can see that something awesome.
He thinks you're awesome.
I want to be you when I grow up. who told you to say this, young man? Your sister? No? You know, that's a good question. How old are you, sir? 56? How old? 4. Is that your sister over there? Or the one in back of you? How do you like me now? Okay, I was born, get ready for this. I was born Chaim Vitz. This language has more than any language on earth. In fact, saying my given Hebrew name, you actually start sounding like a cat throwing up a hairball before your vocal cords cut in. So I'm going to slow it down. That happens before you go, ah. Chaim. That comes after. Blacked out. So if I said, hi, my name is, Chaim, I was born in, this city, I would say, Hashem should be Chaim Rolati B'Chaifa. A lot of chas in there. Needless to say, it's not a language that's spreading anytime soon. So I was given the name Chaim Vitz, my father's last name, which was shortened. And then when I came to America, I decided to change it, sort of dress British, think Yiddish, Try to make it work. When in Rome, do as the Romans. Mom will explain what that means. And I had to make my name easier to pronounce, because the mountain is not going to come to you, my habit. She's going to explain what that means, too. There's no reason to put, I do business speeches and all corporate speech. There's no reason for you to add more hurdles to make it harder for people to give you money. So make it easier for people to come to you. Dress like your boss, be at the right place at the right time with the right thing. This is going to turn into a corporate speech. But so many things are so simple, you'd be shocked. The successful people in the world, that means who have more money than you and I do some really cool stuff. You go, gee, why didn't I do that? So buy my books, they're pretty good. Me Inc., pretty good. You should buy it. And what's the other one? On Power.
Another question up front.
Hi, Jane. Martinson here. We live up the street, like 2 blocks away, and Cindy wants to know if she'd make you some homemade cookies, but you come by later.
You were married. When a woman asks to come, for me to come by later, it doesn't mean what you... I got some cookies for you. I should do it. Yeah, but it's tough. It's tough to be on a diet and go through a bakery. You're a gorgeous woman. That son of a bee is going to be in the same room with you, so that's torture. This couple have come and see us, how many times?
Hundreds.
Hundreds.
Since I was 11.
Since you were 11? What's, you bought Paul Stanley's what?
We bought Paul Stanley's Corvette.
You bought Paul Stanley's Corvette.
Two of them.
Two of them. Paul is like you ladies with fashion. Every few months, I don't like that car. I'm going to get a new one. What is he? I'm not even aware what he's got. What does he have now? He's got a Rolls Royce. I will wear the same jeans and have the same until it falls off my back. I've had the same truck for I don't know how long.
My first show was in 79. I wanted to get a lug gun, but it didn't roll.
Well, where's the microphone? Let him. Oh, we'll get right to you, I swear.
My first show was Dynasty. I was trying to get a love gun, but I didn't have a car back then. My wife saw a love gun, and we've been as far as Italy to see you guys. And hopefully with this new tour, we plan on going to Japan as far as we can.
They've been on a few tours as well. You know about the Kiss Cruises?
Yeah.
People have a lot of fun. I'm not aware of any fights. I've performed marriages on the cruise? They're probably people from as many as 34 countries come together for a few days and have a ball. So do we.
Been on every one of them.
Oh, yeah.
How many more are you doing?
And now there are new Facebook and Schmacebook. I have no idea what anybody's talking about, but there are social posts and social media of people that come from, or people that bought the bases. And
yes.
The base, what are you calling it? The base collector's what?
Genex Center's page. Facebook,
all that.
GSX.
Another question from the same lady.
I'm Katie, I'm 15.
Katie, I'm going to say something really important because I'm your biggest fan, okay? Okay. In the world, there are men. It's not going to be a joke. And I want you to be a leader. And part of that, because they're not going to wait around for you to figure out your own self-esteem. So part of that is take this goddamn microphone and shove it in your face and talk like you deserve to be heard, because you are going to be a leader. So don't do. Yes, you do. You're a leader. Put that microphone down and just speak up.
Okay, I'm Katie. I'm 15. Stay in touch with Jim Neff after your experience in Cadillac, Michigan.
Yes. Do you want to tell them who Jim Neff is?
Go for it, kid. My daughter.
Let me help you. Jim Neff is a former English teacher, school teacher, who went into a small town that has 35,000 people, Cadillac, Michigan, in 1975. He was looking for a way to feed his family. But he couldn't find a job because jobs were scarce and nobody wanted an English teacher. I don't know why. But they needed a football coach. So he went into this small town. Come on over, Elvira. Have a seat. And he went into this small town, and the school principal says, are you a coach? Can you do football coaching? He goes, of course. He didn't know a thing about football. And he noticed that football team, Cadillac, Michigan, had never won a single football game. Not one. And he noticed when he was, what is it called, rehearsing, practicing, thank you, that they kept talking about KISS. And this was new with them. What's this KISS stuff? And he goes, oh, that's a band, that weird. So he started to look into it, and he saw that the team was passionate about that. So in his genius, he said, here's what we're going to do, guys. You can come on the field and wear KISS makeup, and we're going to call the different plays, like halfback, he's got a tight end, I don't, you know, all that other stuff, by the names of the songs. Let's do Black Diamond, let's do Strutter, let's do Deuce and all that. That team went on to win, I don't want to exaggerate, the national champion, unbeaten, went on to win so big, so fast, like caught everybody, a nowhere town, 35,000 people, where the grown-ups all left to go work in Detroit in the auto factory. So these young kids drank a lot. There were no reference points, mentors, dads were gone. So when we came into Cadillac, Michigan, just as a kind of a, hey, you guys are cool, you won the championship, we found the entire, we came in hearses, because they didn't have a limo service. You could smell the formaldehyde in the car. I went on top of a roof to wave at people because I thought they were going to embalm me. You could smell like this is where they brought people. You can go to ESPN. There's an hour special. It's about Jim Neff, who took this, who had never been involved with football at all, and took this team all the way to the championship. The mayor was there in full makeup, and the state senator was there in full makeup. The entire town. Now, I'm going to give you the funny punchline at the end, which is actually, on my show, is true. They have a monument and everything to the back. It's really about the small town. Have big dreams, reach for the sky, like, go for it. You can't, nothing can stop you except you. So, we put on a concert, set the ceiling on fire and all that, and tried to say, hey, thanks so much. And then we left on a helicopter.
We found out after the fact that that night when we played the concert, a few years later, the statistics showed that there were more births due to that night than at any time in the history of that.
Yeah!
That's true. Apparently after the concert, everybody decided to go home and do encores.
Another question over here, stage right.
See what I did there?
Hey Jane, I'm Rick. Right.
Oh yeah!
Very good.
I got a question. One of the Kissology discs on the audio commentary, you referred to a certain tour as the Prick Tour. Which tour was that, and why was it called the Prick Tour?
Freak?
Prick.
Prick. Like when you take a tack and you stick it in your finger, you prick your finger.
You used to be in comedy.
That's why I'm here. Used to be.
I'm not sure. What else did I say?
Look,
the male of the species manufactures hundreds of millions of sperm daily.
Okay.
We can't.
There are people in the third picture.
I think it had something to do with Paul's family, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, that tour, she was really mean to me.
Good. Someone just passed this up to me. You want to wish her, read that?
Yeah.
Okay, you want to wish her, want to have her stand up?
Jennifer Fuller, where are you? Jennifer. There's Jennifer.
Happy birthday, Jennifer!
It's her birthday.
I'm not going to read the rest of the thing. Here's the number. That numbers mean nothing.
50.
Most beautiful girl 50. Is the closest one. Just remember that.
What did you say? 50.
You're not. 15, did you say?
50, 50.
Yeah.
You'll be sleeping alone tonight. You never say a woman's age.
Of course not. Here's why you can't win. When you meet a 20-year-old girl and she says, guess how old I am? And you make, because you're smiling, like, well, I don't want to guess how old. No, go ahead, guess how old. Okay, you're 21? You mean I look that old? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, 19. You mean I look that young? Okay, well, I'm not doing well here, so that must mean you're 20 years old. You mean I look my age? And by the way, we don't care. No guy has ever walked up to me and said, hey Gene, guess my age. You don't care.
Hey, you look beautiful.
What's that?
Hey Gene, my name is Brian. This is less a question, more a thank you. I'm also in the Army. Since I posted on Facebook that I was going to have the opportunity to meet you, I've got a lot of private messages that have simply said, please tell Gene, thank you. He was the last hand I shook before I went into combat. I want to say thank you.
Wow. Don't get me started about the military. I'll tell you a quick story. My mother was, that's not a secret, I talk about it a lot. My mother was 14. When she was in the concentration camps of Nazi Germany. She understands what America is all about. She should be teaching every young child here that, you know, history is just the luck of the draw. You're born at this time, at this place. 50 million people died in World War II. All of them. 6 million Jews, 2 million gays, 2 million Catholics, and on and on and on. And you just happen to be born here. My mother was born during that time. Our entire family was taken home. And, you know, I don't want to go to the other stories, but when we first came to America in 1958, there were only 3 or 4 TV channels in New York City. And I was fascinated because I'd never seen a television set, literally. And at the end of the night, about 11 o'clock, 11:30, television would go off the air. And before it went off the air, eventually at the end you'd hear, just this white noise. Before then, they would play sort of spiritual music, uplifting music, and it would be a jet flying through the sky. You can YouTube it. And at the end, the jet turns upwards and, you know, disappears into the clouds. And the last thing the guy says, and touch the face of God. And then the American flag would come up and do that. And if this is what grabs me every time. And every time my mother saw that flag, she would shush me up and she would cry. And I was a little kid and I didn't understand what she was sad about, but she wasn't sad. She was. So don't roll your eyes. Don't let your kids roll their eyes or when the flag is flying and somebody's talking. Just don't let them do that. People have died for that. And I don't remember the last boatload of people who dropped to their knees on the shore and said, thank God I made it to France. They all want to come here. Right? Right. There are no 11 million American illegal aliens in any other country. We're here. Everybody wants to come here. That flag means something. Without your troop, without you guys, we wouldn't be here. So a note to all of you, if you're not out in Fallujah and other places of the world, and I've got the flag that was flown in Fallujah by the sergeant who took his troops into combat. When you're standing in line for your cup of coffee at Starbucks and somebody in uniform, first responders, cops, firemen, anybody's, just get out of the way. It ain't about you or the traffic jam or I've got to get to, you know, all that. They're not looking for parades or riches or anything. Just get out of the way, and you know, a little respect would go a long way. Because they risk their lives. You do nothing. You do. So I literally am looking forward to looking into each and every one of your beautiful faces and telling you how much this means to me. So I'm going to go back someplace. I don't know where I'm going. And we'll see you soon. Listen, there's good food. There's great drinks. These people have been so kind to us at this recording studio. Those of you who are musicians, come back and use the facility. And we look forward to meeting you back there.
Gene Simmons, everyone.